This week's episode of Heavy Meta is brought to you by Face-to-Face Games. If you like paper cards, that's the place to get them.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome to Heavy Meta, your source for magic news, entertainment, and comedy.
Good morning, Vietnam! I'm Raging Gumby.
I'm Chef Tony.
And I'm going to run with this. I'm Tristan Gregson, and tonight on Heavy Meta, we may talk about Kaladesh. It is fairly likely, as we are at the dawn of the pre-release. We may also talk about all the classic magic drama that fills our lives, which isn't so much, depending on who you are. But we have a very special guest tonight at a very special time. We have Josh from Original Art MTG, or is it Original MTG Art?
Original Magic Art.
There we go. See, I'm going to say it like six times. Eventually, the right one will be in there, but it'll be like it's by Menon. It's going to be in people's heads by the time we're done talking about it. Josh, you just launched a new Kickstarter campaign for a new series of classic art tokens. We'll open the show with you here. Pretend I've never heard about any of this kind of stuff. Who are you and what do you do?
Okay, so my name's Josh Krause. I make tokens and talk about magic art. Last February, we launched the original Classic Art Tokens, which had a series of tokens that can be used for card games. Obviously, they're very useful for Magic. You can also use them in other card games. Don't sue me, Wizards. Then we also have a series of playmats that came out with the project, and the project did very well. We raised over $100,000 with 1,800 backers. After the project ended, we had a few more sales after that. So we did well enough, and there was enough tokens left over that we didn't make, because we made over 144 different tokens for the first project, but there are hundreds of tokens for Magic, including counters and all these other things that you can make, and I wanted to make all the things, so we made Classic Art Tokens Marble Edition, which has all new tokens. It has some of the favorites from the previous set, but everything has new art. There are collections of tokens for people that play Pauper, Cube, and then there's an updated one for Standard. And we also have playmats with all new art, and then we introduce playmat bags, dice bags, and premium tokens.
All right, so
that's an exhaustive line.
Where can people go to take a look at these? So that
we
they can see them.
Sure. The project is live on Kickstarter. We actually bought the domain for it, so you can, an easy way to get to it, so I don't have to read out all of the very long, Kickstarter address. You can just go to classicarttokens.com, and that directs you right to the Kickstarter project. Just before we started casting, we actually fully funded in less than 11 hours. So we hit our $10,000 goal, and we are on our way towards the next stretch goals.
Woo! Insert applause here.
I think we could have applauded big time at the first time out. We were looking for $5,000. We got $100,000. I mean, that's hats off to everybody, Magic Community, Josh and Josh's project. What a loving, great, supportive group out there. And myself, I know that as someone that uses a variety of tokens, especially in a cube format, and someone that appreciates art from time to time, this is an awesome project. It was the first time around. I think we had Josh at some point. It was a drunken haze. We've talked about this kind of stuff before. But again, in case you've never heard about it, check out the website, check out the project. I think there's a multitude of options this time for stuff that you may be interested in. I know that I keep my tokens next to my draft basic lands and sleeves every time I go to F&M, and there's nothing classier than what Josh puts out there. At least that's how I feel. Is there anything you can give us right now in terms of like stretch goals or things that might be out there for people as the month goes on? Because we've got a long way to go.
Sure. So our next stretch goal is just in $5,000, so hopefully we can reach that today.
During this cast, probably. That's been real.
That would be amazing. That stretch goal is going to expand the full set from 54 cards to 72, and we're going to include a lot of the tokens that you saw with Kaladesh and take the crown. So we're going to have a star-star construct, a 6-6 beast, a servo, an energy counter, a 1-1 goblin that can't block, as well as an hour counter in case you really love Midnight Oil. And then a bunch of other things. We have 18 new cards that are becoming, be added to the full set. And then after that, we add in things like a premium box, more playmat options, more playmat bags and dice bags. And it just grows from there. If we can, like the end goal, like right now on the project page, if you scroll down, you'll see our stretch goals and we have the first, few listed. So like the up to $50,000, which hopefully we should be able to get, you know, pretty soon, relatively. And, but if we can hit if we can beat what we did last year, I set a goal at 110,000. If we can hit 110,000, all of the full sets, token collections, and bonus tokens are going to have gilt edges. Wow. So I don't know if you've ever seen like a pack of cards that has gilt edges. It's those gold. It just looks like a solid block of gold. And right now the it's very high quality card stock, but they're just black on the sides. But if we can, if we can hit 110,000, we'll have gilt edges on everything, on all of the full sets, the token collections and the bonus sets, which
that's
I've
awesome.
Yeah. I really hope that we get there because I honestly can't wait to see them. And there's no way that I could make that happen without that level of support and that high of a print run because it's simply too expensive to justify otherwise.
Well, as you know, as we were talking in the precast of the show, you know, on your last project, I feel like the ball really started to kind of just snowball and really kind of not necessarily roll out of control, but roll into this huge thing last time. And Magic players have a tendency to be stingy, to be looking for, you know, the play a spell, but also draw two spells kind of life mentality. And I've got to say a project like this, especially, you know, if you're on the fence about something like it, look, it's already funded. Now you're getting all this bonus stuff if these things happen. And you have so many different options at so many different price levels of how much you want to be able to get out of this project. Get into it. That's not like a paid for sponsorship endorsement I'm giving here. That's like how I feel about the whole concept. Obviously, Josh is an amazing guy. The stuff he puts out there is great. But if you're hearing this in the next 28 days and change, you should definitely be putting something into this project because you'll get so much more out of it. And look at how far it'll go in the community. I mean, obviously, as you're talking, we're probably all just kind of scrolling through the page and looking at all the amazing stuff that's up there right now.
Absolutely.
And going to be showing up in time for the holidays, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
That's right. We last project, we beat our ship date by a month. Actually, we started shipping like a month and a half ahead of schedule. And when we first ran the project, we added a bit of cushion. And this time we've taken that cushion out. We've done everything we can to make sure that regardless of how many backers we get, we're able to ship on time, starting in hopefully early December so that everybody gets their stuff in time for the holidays.
And if the SVU members are looking for another excuse to contribute to this project and help really family members of our own community, not only do I feel like Josh is part of the tribe, but we have another very special Josh is working on this project as well. Our own The Proxy Guy, our giant giraffe Eeyore-wearing compatriot, is also helping you on this project. What is the proxy guy doing for you? Obviously, he's not making proxies. He must be doing something else exciting.
Yeah, so Josh helped put together the playmat bags, the dice bags, and then he helped with a lot of the images on the site. He helped with especially the reward levels. He did a lot of those images and put those together for me. I couldn't have done it without him. I mean, I brought him on knowing that we're going to have, due to the increased scope of the project, we're going to have a lot more design work needed. And he did an amazing job.
Well, there you go. I'm already out of excuses not to be part of this project. And now you've got one of my favorite people on the planet, Josh, the proxy guy, also involved. This seems like a home run. At this point, I'm just nitpicking and be like, where's my cube set? Because clearly that's all I care about. I mean, I'm looking for those cards to get in there. Where's that stretch goal? Or is that after 100K this time?
So if you actually, if you look, we have the different token collections listed. It's in a GIF, whatever. And it cycles through the three different options. So you can see what's in each standard collection, each pauper collection, and each, cube collection. If it's under the rotating cons dragons, we have it, you can see the different, you can see the box. And then you can see, it's listed there. So in your cube collection, I did pull a lot of information from there, from the, I know I asked you, you gave some great input on what should be going into the cube. And there's a lot of input there. And it's just kind of a, there are a few things that we made in the first set that we didn't want to do too many repeats. So we just pulled like the more popular ones because we still want to include so those tokens that have never, that didn't make the first project and maybe never have never seen print before, like the 6/6 worm with trample has never actually been in print. I know there's an online version, but there's never actually a physical card for it. So that's just an example of one thing that we were able to include in the project that we weren't able to in the original project. I think we have, if you compare just from launch, it'll go up a lot once we get to the next stretch goal. Just from launch, we have 21 new tokens in this new full set that didn't appear in the full set previous project, and that's just going to increase as we go forward.
A couple of good questions while we're here. You know, one, you know, you do have a stretch goal there that's going to increase the size from 54 to 72. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, there we go. But also, you know, if I want original ones right now, are they just out of print? Do you have them? I know if I go to your website, it's going to direct me to the Kickstarter page right now. Are you still selling any of the original print run that you may still have? Is there plans to reprint originals in other capacities? Or is this Kickstarter plan right now the only way to get some of the original ones that were printed the first time out?
So yeah, we overprinted knowing that there'd be some demand and we'd be able to sell them after the project, but we're not going to be printing any more of the full sets because now that the set of cards has expanded, making a full set of the old stuff doesn't really make much sense. So we have, a few left. We included, 300 of them, made them available for the project because we've run a few mass drops. We might run a few in the future. But we've made them available, and they're at the same cost as if you had backed the previous project. So if you wanted a full set from the original project and the bonus tokens for $30, we have our we call it the classic and marble reward level, where you can get a full set from the current project and a full set from the previous project for $60, or you can get a premium set from this project and a full set from the previous project. And we've already got 26 of those are gone out of 300, so 10% of them are already gone, and this is just day one. If we can sell out of those, that'd be amazing. If you missed out on the first project,
let's be honest. You're 10 hours in. And at this point, we've got full infomercial on this. We've told you it's a limited time offer. We've told you it's a limited run. We told you that you have to act now in order to get the ones you want. You know, we do not have callers standing by, but what we do have is the internet, which is far superior. But this product is extraordinarily limited. You know, again, you've talked me into upping my timetable on this because I'm one of those guys. I'm like the Kickstarter lurker. Like, I know when my friends are doing projects and like I want to support them, and I'll wait until the cool stretch goals kick in. It's like, I want that Ghostbusters board game, but I'll wait until the classic cartoon characters are included at this stretch goal. But now with the limited quantities on the kind of things we got in this one, I'm not going to be able to sit on it for 20 days before I put in my bid. It seems like we've gone. Is there any deeper we can go here? What other aspects have we not covered on how amazing this project is?
If we can hit the higher stretch goals, we are going to be including free tokens for everybody, and they're going to be some really, really fun ones. So the first set of six, like if you look at the stretch goals, you'll see that we hit those fairly early. Hopefully, I mean, again, if we keep on this track fairly early, we'll get at $35,000, you get six free bonus tokens, and those are going to be some tokens that you use, like the True Scotsman. That's going to be there. The alternate art, the Monarch, is going to be there. We got some great alternate art tokens that'll be included. But then once you get to the $45,000 and above, we're going to be doing some really fun ones, like we're going to make double-sided voting cards. If you play Conspiracy or any of the Will of the Council or Council's Dilemma, so we're going to have like a double-sided death taxes token for anybody that plays capital punishment. We're going to have all those double-sided ones. Like we have the, we're showing off the Khan's Dragons one. We have a War and Peace one. If you play Angel of Strife, that's going to be in the next expansion of the full set. But we have all 12 of the Will of the Council, Council's Dilemma voting cards ready for bonus tokens. And then once we get to, like, once we hit those, we have something really special. We've actually created a werewolf, a villager, a seer, and a doctor. And so if we can unlock those, you'll be able to, basically with our, with the free bonus tokens, just by backing the project, you get a free set of cards to play werewolf with.
A Magic player's additional fun pastime. And if you are not familiar with that game, go back and listen to old episodes of the A-Team, where Jay Bush will definitely indoctrinate you into the community that is Werewolf. If you're the few that haven't played it yet, it's indeed a great game. And again, it's like you get a bonus game if we hit that stretch goal. That's awesome. I feel like we have thoroughly shilled out this project, despite the fact that we are not doing that. There's now, Josh has not paid for this advertising time or space, and I should make an announcement that says that at no point has Mandeprived.com or Tony or Gumby or myself been at any point paid to give this endorsement. This is entirely for real, which is how we usually do things on the cast, unless someone does want to pay us, and then things will change, I'm sure. But in the interim, no, that's just super badass, Josh. I'm super glad you're here to talk about it. And then you get to listen to us bitch and moan about shit for an hour and a half after. So thanks for being here, definitely.
Well, I will try to contribute bitches and moans when I can.
Should be.
Do you want to start the bitching and the moaning? How are things?
I survived the weekend up here in the sweltering north. It was this summer.
I feel like we have this shared, like, I you're now like you're we're not, you know, like we're not Eskimo brothers, but there's some kind of magic verse where it's like, if you've survived as a vendor on a long weekend like you just did, like there should just be this unspoken language, like some kind of nod or handshake where it's like, I know what you've been through, man. I know what you've been through. And it's like, we were also talking before the cast got started tonight about how, you know, when you work as close to this game as Tony does right now, like, unfortunately, certain aspects of it change, your mentality towards things change. And it's like, usually we're like, oh man, pre-release is coming up. Awesome. And Tony's getting to the part where of life where it's like, pre-release is coming up. Fuck. Like, we have to release another set. We have to go through all this stuff. And you're not even there yet. Like, what did you do just this last weekend?
Oh, so this weekend, and I'm super hyped for this set. Like, I don't get me wrong, pre-release is my favorite time of the year. It's my Christmas 4
to
5
to 6. You've yet to be broken. It'll happen eventually.
Times a year. Yeah, absolutely. Spirit strong. Can't hold me down. So this weekend was the WMCQ. So what's really awesome for me is I got to be a part of two of the three World Magic Cup qualifiers in Canada, because I got to cast the one in Montreal, and now we host the one in Toronto. So this was sort of like the biggest event that we were going to put on from this GP until the theoretical next GP, which is now a confirmed next GP. So the WMCQ weekend is like the biggest fucking deal of the year. So we knew it was going to be. We planned for it. We did our goddamnedest to make sure that we didn't forget anything and learn from all of our other shows. And this was the first time we were doing a doubleheader show in a not new venue, new to a couple of the people that were working the show, but a venue's a venue is a venue, right, Tristan?
Yeah, as I always like to tell people when they ask me about my time working as a magic vendor, it's like I got to see all the spectacular cities in North America and all of their great airports and convention center inside showrooms. That's what I know of the world now.
Yeah. So we hosted ours in a university gymnasium, which was actually pretty cool, 'cause there was like other people around and like on campus, and they could like wander in and see how cool it was. And we had like four vendors total. Plus we had a food booth. And it was just a really sweet time. It was I believe we now hold the record for the largest WMCQ, 367 players was our final count, followed up by a 5K Modern Open the next day, because if you bring everybody to town to play Modern, you might as well throw them a 5K tournament the next day. So that was really fucking sweet, and you can check out all the articles and all the top 8, 16 deck lists on ManaDeprived.com, but Felix C. is the one who won the final spot on Team Canada. And this guy is so good. If we had been doing coverage the entire time, he would be our, like, Todd Anderson, Jerry Thompson, like someone with 33 top eights in the Open Series. So his median finish over the last six Open events we've held is one.
I'm no math scientist, but that seems pretty good.
He has four firsts and 2 seconds. So this guy's good. He's really, really fucking good. So this year, I think this is the strongest Team Canada we've ever had. I'm really, really hyped. This is a really awesome weekend to add to the overarching Epic Magic story, which is, now that I'm saying it out loud and listening to you talk about the pre-release thing, it's what I'm really passionate about. And that this is what's really exciting, is seeing what's happening on the like grand and global scale, and seeing that there's someone from Team Face to Face top eighting every single pro tour and every single worlds and every single thing amazing that's happening in Magic is just, It feels like all the hard work's paying off.
You're a little spent, though, at this point, I'd imagine, after the long weekend.
It was definitely a long weekend, a couple of, you know, 15, 16-hour days, which obviously culminated with a beer at the bar downstairs from the shop, right? Because you can't work 15 hours a day and not cool off. So, you know, the 15-hour day becomes a 16-hour day, and 6:30 in the morning comes real quick, but You power through. It was a great weekend. It was a fantastic fucking weekend. Smashing success.
And what makes you guys special, I feel like, and what makes Tony special, is that when you told me part of this story the first time, you were explaining to me that, you know, it's not, you know, if you've been to a Magic event, which I'm sure you have if you're listening to this show, you see the vendor booths, you've been to a high school gymnasium, you've been to the inside of a convention center once, but you don't have Chef Tony. You don't have all the amazing things he brings to an event on top of that. And very casually, you're explaining to me about how you had, like, just a food booth additionally this time. And what were you serving there this weekend?
Well, I mean, aside from just having cold drinks available where you didn't have to wander to a shitty vending machine that was out and you could interact with a human who, you know, would ask you how your day is. And
we'll always take your crumpled up dollar bills. Although, right? That's not a problem in Canada.
No, it's all coins, right? That's the best part. Like, it didn't matter.
My joke fell flat immediately, but go on.
But we had the event sponsored by two of the, like, local companies that we interact and support with. Just Craft Sodas is a company by a man named Matt Cherkis, who was actually playing in the events. He comes and plays at our stores all the time. He's a good friend of mine. Actually, he had just tweeted me his new energy deck list that he's planning on playing right before the cast. So Just Craft Sodas sponsored it. So we had free sodas for everyone who pre-registered both days, as well as Sweets from the Earth, which is a local Toronto baking company. And the products that we get from them are all vegan and nut-free. So if you've ever been in a room full of 500 diverse people, that appeals to basically everyone.
Some of them are nut-free, yes.
So, yeah, right? No, we had, you know, s'more cookies and double chocolate cookies, and just the fact that there was a human being to interact with was really nice. And then for, you know, lunch, we bought in hot pizzas because we could actually do that. That was hot, but we did it, you know, made an announcement. It did it every round and made sure that people knew that they could get it hot and when they could get it, so it wasn't shitty or anything. And for a bunch of the vegetarian people or people that had dietary restrictions, I made 12 liters of an Italian dressed quinoa salad.
There it is. That, like, was the money shot I was looking for. You just I was just the first time we were talking. You're like, yeah, I had to carry all this quinoa salad. I was like, man, I've never heard that said at a Magic
tournament. Ever, like, in my life. Oh, this quinoa salad.
So I know there's, like, a subsect of the community who, it would be sweet if they listen to this cast, but they probably don't. They have come to know that I tend to bring, like, a gluten-free or dairy-free option for.
A subset of that community is me. I'm glutarded, so.
Yeah, I thought you were going to talk about women there for a second.
No,
a different direction.
There's always like a couple of judges I know that really appreciate it. So, like, I know if I put the work into it, it's going to be appreciated. And then I just sort of, like, offer it to some of the other people that, like, I can just tell when someone's, like, not really turned on by the idea of, like, having pizza for lunch or a bag of chips that I'm offering. So it's a nice option, and I wish I could do something that was, like, all food that I serve, but that's just simply unrealistic. But you know, I brought like, you know, 12 liters of homemade quinoa salad, and that was gone by the end of day one. So I was pretty happy with that. And then very first thing in the morning, we're not even set up, one of the judges walks in. He's like, yo, can I grab some of that quinoa salad for breakfast? And I was like, I sold it all yesterday.
You know, there's only so much you can do. Like,
and that's what I thought. I was like, well, I have to be back here in 7 hours, and I have some packing to do. Do I have enough time to make some of this? Like, no, I probably don't. So I still actually have a bunch of it here. It's what I had for dinner. It's fucking delicious.
And that's what makes a Tony event even better than a non-Tony event, in my opinion. Like, I'm not always searching for gluten-free, although I do have a nut and shellfish allergy. So it's good to know that people like you are out there, but it's so rare. Like, I'm not going to find that in the even anywhere in the state of California, which is so progressive, and we have our, like, healthy options at the ballpark, like, concession stands and stuff. But we do not have Chef Tony at the Magic tournaments showing up with the 12 liters of quinoa salad.
And it was so fucking good. Like, I've made it a few times.
Said no one about a quinoa salad ever. No, I'm kidding.
But seriously, so this recipe I actually got from Kelly, which is like mad respect, right? He, when we did our first event, that was like a Magic board games and beer. We, like, his wife made us shirts. It was all like handwritten tickets, and we did it at the Steam Whistle Brewery in Toronto, right by the CN Tower. And it was
that only serves one beer. Sorry,
right? It was the overarching business aspect of it was like a complete and utter fucking disaster. But everyone had such a great time. They were like, "Oh, you got to do this forever." And that's actually what sort of kickstarted me and Kelly being like, maybe we could actually like open a game store. And then it became like face to face and like trying to reach out, and then Sal reaching out and Kelly finally like saying like, yeah, I really want to do this. So that's sort of like the thing that started it. And he wanted me to make a quinoa salad, and I like kept telling him it was crazy, and I made it, and it was obviously delicious, but every time I make it, it gets a little bit better. And this was by far the best one.
So it's hard to follow that up. I don't really know where I'm supposed to go from quinoa salad. No, that's that's impressive. That is very impressive. You also put a much nicer spin on that weekend than I was expecting, because clearly my trials and tribulations at F&M are the kind of the exact opposite situation right now. I was looking for a softer lead-in to making a 13-year-old Jewish boy cry on Friday, but I guess I'm not going to get one, so I'm going to have to work with what I've got here.
You don't think quinoa salad would make him cry?
It would make me cry if someone offered it to me as condolences for losing.
Well, if it makes you feel better, that judge that wanted quinoa salad at the start of the day was so upset that he stayed until the very end of everything and hung out and chatted with us, because he was I made him so mad without having quinoa salad that he stayed and hung out with us till the very end and helped us clean up all the chairs and tables. Thanks, anyway, Matt Chow.
Maybe that's a Canadian thing that you made me so mad that I
know,
hung out
I'm
with
now going to move all these chairs for you in frustration.
So that's what happened when I did something awful. So there's your lead in.
Yeah. So I know when I first moved down here to Los Angeles back in April, you know, on the show, I'd come on a lot and talk about how crazy it was to me that it seemed that nowhere down here knew how to run something as simple as a fucking draft on a Friday night. After 7 different stores, I found that still no one knows how to run a fucking draft in here in Southern California. It's insane to me. You've got some of the smartest people on the planet in this area, mostly because we have over 4 million of them in such a small place, but still nothing. I ended up buying into like this rewards program for this one store that I go to in Burbank, and it's kind of like priced me into going there for F&M every week. The problem is that even though it's lowered the cost of drafting every week to the point where it's almost reasonable, their price structure is just as bad, if not worse, than everywhere else around us, in that you have to have 7 points or more at the end of a 3-round draft in order to be in the prize pool, if you want to call it that. So if you lose your first round, you're out. If you lose your second round, you're out. And if you get into your third round, 95% of the players at that juncture split. Okay?
Yeah,
that's the safest way to do it.
It's so stupid, because you show up on a Friday night, you spend an hour drafting, you maybe play for an hour and a half in 2 rounds, and then best case scenario, you don't play any more Magic, and you're like, what am I doing with my life? So already it's kind of like you're being cheated out of time and the opportunity to play. Although a lot of players will split the prize and then play for the promo or whatever, so someone actually goes 3-0. But you're not really playing for anything, and what happens is that they don't give packs, they give store credit, and that store credit is divided among the players that were eligible for prize in the pool. So most often, it usually costs $15 a draft, although if you're a member, it costs $12, and you get like $17.50 in store credit on average if you split with your opponent. So
U.S.?
U.S.
Holy fuck.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure yet. That's not the problem. The problem is that no rounds matter. Like, if you lose ones, why are you here? Why are you playing? Like, so many people get discouraged. They're not interested. And the third round's even worse because it's a bunch of people either playing for nothing or not playing because they don't want to lose an opportunity to get something. For weeks now, my friend and I that keep going to F&M there keep talking to the players, being like, you know what, like, is this something you want? Like, how long has this been going on? Like, can't we start a petition on this? Like, every round should matter. Like, running a booster draft is so fucking easy. If you win a round, you get a pack. If you go 3-0, you get, like, 4 packs, and you get the promo of the week. Like, you got your cost and product or whatever, or plus one or whatever it is. And then the blowback from players there is like, well, if I win my draft, it should be free to play the next time. It's like, okay, well, you know, the it could be done. The things could be changed. If you win your draft, you could get a fucking voucher to draft free next week. Who gives a shit? It can be done. The price is there. The rent is not too damn high. So a few weeks ago, my friend and I made the decision. It was like, all right, well, we're just going to stop splitting. Like, we're going to play more. More people are going to realize this system sucks, but at least we'll play more Magic, win or lose. We're coming here to get, you know, full experience, and maybe that'll help the value. The plot thickens. 2 weeks ago, once a month, the store runs Two-Headed Giant for F&M instead of just draft. And the structure is similar in terms of prize. You'll still only play 3 rounds. My friend and I, we play. We win the first 2 rounds. We get to the 3rd round, and we're paired against a guy who's this super douchey asshole 18-year-old, or maybe he's older, I don't know, guy that, like, oh, I never play here. Like, why would I split? It doesn't matter if I lose because I'm never going to come back ever. But we've seen this guy multiple times. And his kind of, I guess, friend who, like, fronted all the money to play that day and just, like, wants to play Magic and hang out but doesn't want to leave with nothing. And he just wants to split so that he can have something to play next week. So then we cave and split with those guys. But then we play the game for fun and we completely obliterate them. And it's like, why didn't we stick with Team No Splits? Like, we need to keep showing people that this system doesn't work in the hopes of changing the system. Which brings me to this last week where I end up in the situation where I'm 2-0 and I have to sit across from a kid who clearly wants to split. Is this young boy covered in acne and wants to get... Oh, yeah, he is. He's one of the tribe, as my Jewish friend calls him, which is weird. I've never heard them say that before. I feel like I'm being set up.
Probably.
It's like when Daryl in the warehouse teaches Michael Scott how to say, like, slang. Oh, God.
Anything.
Yeah, like...
It's so fucking flicka. Funny.
Dick and Flicka. No, so I get paired against this kid, and I try to be really nice to him. I was like, look, you know, like, let's play. Like, we get to play more Magic. You know, one of us who wins gets to pay for your pre-release. But if you go 3-0... you knock other people that would be 7 points out, so your share of the prize pool should go up. In fact, usually you leave with like $40 in store credit if you 3-0 your pod versus the $17.50 or whatever. And again, the math doesn't even fucking make sense. The whole thing is so messed up. And like every time you ask the people that work there, like, oh, like how does the prize breakdown work? They're like, we really don't know. Like they told us, we just put it into this thing and then we spit out the cards and all this stuff. So I play the kid. I win the first game because he, like, kept a 2-lander with his red-black aggro vampires deck. It was still a very close game. Game 2, he, like, threatens my... the giant insectile aberration guy is and, like, domes me for a million and kills me. In Game 3, it's very close. We're going back and forth. I, like, Geist Blast to copy my draw 3, discard 1, untap 2 lands, like, go through my whole deck. Eventually get to my Burn with Within and dome him into the face for 10 for Fireball for the win. And then he, like, throws his deck down, says, oh, he did all that for nothing, and he starts crying.
That's so malicious of me to laugh, but... Oh, man. But, you know, like, that sucks for you, because, like, you have to sit there and, like, deal with the fact that you just made a kid cry. But at the same time, that kid has to go through that shit and learn to deal with it. Like, you're gonna lose. Like, if you play Magic, you're gonna get close, you're gonna lose, you're gonna get right on the cusp and, like, get nothing, you know, like, getting just outside of the money or, you know, be on the bubble. Like, that's preparing that kid to handle that shit better. So
sure, we could draw many life comparisons to that event. It was just, it did not, like, the desired goal of going in there and forcing people to play more Magic, this was not the result we were going for. And yeah, kind of like, you know, it
that's
wasn't
not
a great
gonna
time
make people want to split more. They're like, screw that, I don't want to make little kids cry.
He eventually came around, you know, apologized for his behavior. We shook hands. I gave him the promo for the day. I was like, you know, hey, this isn't a personal thing. Like, I'll see you at the pre-release, where I had to then promise that I would split with him if we met in the finals of the pre-release. It was pretty brutal. And all my goals are is to make it so that a draft could be run where every round matters for people and they all have a chance to get something. Does this seem too ridiculous? I mean, you guys don't draft over at Just Imagine ever, do you?
Yeah, we run drafts. And generally that is the way it's run. We do it to where everybody plays every round and the winner gets a pack, and then the people with the best rec, the top four, get a promo. You know, so yeah, we know it's run decently, but the issue with that is I'm the one that helped them set that format up. Because, you know, you're going there to draft. Like, you don't want single elimination. That's just all the feel-bads, especially for the little kids that come there. Like, okay, yeah, it's cool. You get to sit down. You get a draft. You get to pick all these cards out. And you leave with those no matter what. But then, you know, you get paired up with somebody who's a lot better, and you get beat in the first round, and then you're just like, this is how I want to spend my Friday night, and now I just have to sit here, or I'm just going to leave. So I made it single elimination, or not single elimination, just, you know, rotisserie, whatever you want to call it. Like, the winner gets a pack.
Swiss rounds, yeah.
Swiss. The winner gets a pack, and then the losers play each other, and then the winner of that gets a pack. So only, like, one person leaves with nothing. And you know what? Like, that's just how it goes. Like, most people, though, are not going to continuously be the last person. So.
Right, and every round that
and
you
get to play every round, even if you lose all, even if you get end up with nothing, you still played three rounds of Magic. That there was something on the line
every time. Yeah. That seems like almost like hurdle one, I feel like, for the place I'm at right now. And sure, there's still the complaints about, like, oh, if I 3-0, like, I should, like, win enough that I get to play for free next week. And I think it could be worked in. And the problem I'm running into now is that when I talk to the employees who are there, because there's like a rotating cast of like four or five that are there, and you know, it's a prominent comic book shop, and a lot of the employees that work there are like, they on their name badge, it tells you like what things are their specialities. So it's like, you know, painting minis or comic books or anime or et cetera, et cetera. And no one has like card games, game theory, Magic the Gathering, you know, like competitive gaming. No one has like that kind of stuff on their tag. And every time we talk to these people, it's always like, hey, you know, yes. That's just how it is. Like, you know, no one's coming up and complaining to us every day that there's a problem. Like, I think you must have the problem. And it's like, okay, I guess we won't have this conversation. But I don't really know where to, like, submit information to try to change things.
That's tough. It feels like you're just in desperate need of a local, like, up-and-coming judge. You know, you just need someone to just, like, step in and take control of it.
Yeah, and the guy that was kind of running the FNMs when we first started to show up there on the regular back in, like, the beginning of June, he had to go back to school or something, so he also, like, left recently. But even that guy was just kind of, like, executing orders. It wasn't like, oh, you know, hey, I know how to fix this, or the owner will listen to me. I feel it's like they have a well-greased machine that makes money for them on Friday nights while there are other people in the store doing other things, and they just don't need to worry about Magic players. And the Magic players aren't making enough of a fuss to really bring it up. And now, like, the best evidence I have or ammunition is, well, I made a kid cry. Do you want to do that? Is that something you want to deal with every week? Or you probably just make me leave before you make that changes. Who knows?
Tristan, what if it wasn't the store who's the only responsibility? What if, like, our community could take some responsibility for maybe trying to find a judge in that area. Like, we do have social media. We do have ways to contact specific people in specific regions. Like, maybe the on Reddit, we could, like, the contact the judge community. They could contact the judges that judge in your local area. You have to have L2s, right? Like, you have to have those. And maybe they know some people in your area that could, like, swing by on a Friday night and help that way, too. Because, like, it's not... It's everyone's responsibility, it feels like, to make Magic continue to be awesome, including, like, Wizards and the players and the stores, you know, like, and the distributors. Like, everyone sort of has to play nice for this to work.
Yeah, we are a community at large, and I've tried to come at the angle where I need to get the community members in the store to be more active.
But you don't have the time to offer some, like, services in exchange, right? Like, maybe if there was someone who say, like, I could come and judge your event, so you don't have to worry about it, and then they'll enforce the prize structure, right?
Yeah,
where you're trying to get them to change their behavior.
Like, step one is identifying the problem for them and bringing it to the person that it matters to, because until we bring it to the person that matters to, yeah, you're just gonna get apathetic store employee, and that's not even right. They're good store employees. They just know that they're powerless in the situation. They can't change anything. And I'm somebody that's sat on this show for years and talked about how, you know, it's your responsibility to make something out of your community. You know, Maddie would always complain about how he'd never go to his really close LGS because it was just run by someone that hated it and there was just nobody there. And it's like, well, you know, you gotta talk to the Magic players. You gotta make your own thing. And sure, you know, we've talked to some people that play there, and we're trying to set up email groups to set up our own kind of thing. But it's interesting how ritualistic Friday Night Magic is for so many people, since it's been around for so long, and so many players in their 20s or 30s are just used to going to it. It's like their way to escape the house. It's their way to escape the end of the work week. They've set aside this time so religiously that to try to break that mold, it's like, oh, well, we can meet Thursdays at this bar or this brewery or this person's house that has space. And it's always like, yeah, maybe that'll work, whatever. But it's like FNM is like so ingrained in people. And I keep looking at it where it's like, okay, well, I need to start a petition. I need to get, you know, sign some letters and take some testimonials. I wish I just got the kid crying on video on Friday, but then I need his mom to sign a release. So it's all way too much work. But, yeah, I needed to share that insane-o story, but that's the first time I've ever made a kid cry at a Magic tournament.
Well, I can sort of tell you a story about things that are similar, and this, maybe I'm not gonna end with a kid crying, but there's definitely some people that come to the store, one person in particular. I'm trying to think of a name, so they're never gonna listen to this, but I'll just, you know, try and respect. Let's call them George. So, George is like a young teenager, and the store's been open for 2 years now, so he's gone from being like 12 to 14, or like 13 to 15, and has gone through a lot of social changes, as well as, you know, the physical and whatever, and mental, whatever, but when he was first there a couple years ago, he was just like, he couldn't stand still, he was pacing, he was looking over your game, he was like, just out of control, personal space issues, and that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and they didn't really like want to play with him or teach him or help or anything. And we as a store put a lot of focus into like being accepting and being like, no, like it's okay. Like George, just like you sit down and watch them and they will be happy to show you what's going on. So this goes on for, you know, 6 months, a year, and George comes around and he's at GP Toronto and I see him in GP Montreal and even to this day, he needs to be like reeled in and checked because his aggressive nature when it comes to value grinding is bar none one of the most unpleasant experiences to watch and deal with and manage and try and teach him that what he's doing isn't wrong. It's just making him seem like a really shitty person. It's
so he's
really
like not necessarily ripping off people that are more uneducated than him about the game, but just kind of like aggressively making transactions in his favor
and it's almost exclusively in splits because he's actually really fucking good. He's like in the finals of everything, but when things aren't going his way and he's in the XO1 bracket, the shit that some people are willing to say, and we're not a DQ you out of the store type thing, but like it's very easy to bully people into trying to make a decision without having to like actually do it, you know? Like
you just use your force of will.
Right, basically, yeah. Kids have a way of making especially other kids feel bad about them wanting something for themselves. Right? Like kid A can make kid B feel awful for not wanting to share. And I've seen this kid do some like pretty awful shit making kids cry. So it happens on all levels, and honestly, every time George steps out of line, we maybe give him a 2-week or a 1-month vacation from the store, and we let him know why, and he comes back straight, and he understands, I guess, and I guess he gets a little bit better, but it's been a slow process, learning process, but he's really fucking good at magic. He just still lacks the social skills, and it's very easy to be aggressive and make, like I said, especially kids, cry when it comes to magic. So it's, Tristan, it's you're not great. You're not actually a monster. It
well,
does happen.
I mean, thanks, Dad. No, that's important to hear. I didn't feel like I was a monster. I just felt like,
but the people did. You know? Everyone listening okay. did.
There's no way I'm getting out of this clean. It's like something's gonna be like, hey, it's that guy. He makes kids cry.
I definitely really... think you're a monster. So.
Yeah. Well, to each their own. We've done different things together.
That doesn't sound dirty at all.
No. But it's crazy that you bring that up because, you know, again, you're 2 years into this journey of card retail or just being in a shop that often. And it reminds me of all these stories of kids that I remember, you know, I've been playing this game way too long. You know, we've been going to F&M regularly 13 years ago. I mean, back when Nathan Holliday was a fucking 12-year-old twink, not even a teenager, I used to play with that kid before he was a platinum pro. But seeing kids that were like just socially awkward and, but you know, those are the kind of people that are drawn to this game and watching them grow up and change. And, you know, I remember this kid, Nico, we used to just like, we'd go to big events. We just like give a binder of crap rares to Nico. And 8 hours later, he'd come back with like really playable type 2 cards. And you're like, how'd you do that? He's like, oh, I just traded. Like no one expected me to rip them off as I was like 13. I'm like, all right, I don't need to know, but well done.
Well, yeah.
I mean that's pre-TCG player days, clearly, and pre-smartphone days, but
obviously, right? Like that's how it was back then.
Oh yeah, no, but just watching people grow up, and you kind of have, and you know, you're kind of like I in a way now, like I'm so old at the game store in comparison to other people that I feel like I'm like the uncle that has to come in with the wise old sagely knowledge of like, well, Magic didn't used to be that way, and really, this is what value in cards was, and all that kind of stuff. But the role has changed, but the watching players grow is crazy. And just to think that you may be at that location long enough to really see kids grow up like they're your own fucking kids. That's insane.
There's a couple of them that I actually want to. Like, I talk about Josh a couple times on the cast now, but I really want to see that kid. I can't wait till he gets older, man. He's going to be fucking hilarious. He's going to have a ton of friends. He's got great social skills. Like, he's already mastered the internet, so... technology is good for him. He just needs to like power through school, and he's gonna be a fucking great young man. He's so funny. So yeah, so I met him when he was like, you know, 12, and now he's 14, and he's like, you know, starting high school and shit. And man, yeah.
It's well, crazy. That took a sentimental turn I was not expecting.
Yeah. I love what I do. It's really awesome.
And you're in so many aspects of it now. I mean, you started kind of as the inspirational chef, but here you are pretty much running booths over the weekend, getting out to all these big major events, to keep the face out there in front of the faces of so many more people. Could you even be doing any more at this point, or are you just hoping to maintain and keep all the plates spinning for a while?
Well, I definitely want to, we'll be going to Vegas, and over the next 6 weeks or so, we have, a half a dozen opens or something. It's kind of ridiculous. Thunder Bay, Kitchener, London, Windsor, and then another one in Toronto, 5 in the next 7 weeks, something like that. And there'll be a lot of people flying out for that, and that'll be a new experience for our store. Having people be gone every weekend and not available or not in town, like actually gone. Like there's no backup. So this will be a new experience for us over the next 6 or 7 weeks. And honestly, most of it, I'm staying home because I have to fucking deal with this court thing.
Ah.
Yeah. Well, so
stay out of Saskatchewan these days, from what I'm hearing.
What?
Oh, you didn't hear about the massive HIV spike in Saskatchewan that's going on right now?
No.
They've been tracking it for like over a year. Apparently cases are like up through like 500% over the usual or whatever that is.
Oh, Jesus.
I know, right?
Yeah, I'm not going there.
The playboy you are, that's something you got to watch out for.
Yeah, really. But yeah, with this stupid fucking court thing, like the weekend is actually a date, which sucks because it makes me unavailable when other people are unavailable. So even more of a piss off. But yeah, so I would like to make a new menu item. That would make me happy. Like something that could be like, you know, semi-permanent that I could add, you know, new ingredients. It's been a little while, but it's so hard because Magic players really, really like what I've given them so far, and I can't take anything away, and I'm actually physically out of space for the amount of sales that we do and the equipment that I have. I actually can't store any more product to sell any more food. That's like on Sunday thing, night, it is a good thing, but it's like almost like creatively stifling because now it's been 2 years and I have some really successful items, and adding ice cream this summer was like a fucking sweet thing. But now what can I do with this freezer and this space in the winter, you know, that's going to be new and exciting? Because like I'm still actually cooking like every day, like on top of like going to the shows and stuff. Like, okay, maybe I didn't cook like one of those days. No, that's not true. I went to the store and I made myself a coffee. Use that coffee machine pretty much 7 days a week. So that would be pretty exciting for me.
Well,
that would be something
I
would like to
do. You've got to do what's best for you overall. Like, if they've liked everything that you've done, delete one of the things and create something new. And if it doesn't work out, then you can go back to the old thing. But then at least you got your creative buzz going. Right.
So, right. And I think I have the support. I know I have the support to just sort of do whatever I want, like this. So let's get inspired and come up with something.
Well, you get inspired. I'm good cook, but I don't create dishes. I just make them.
Well, it was a royal we. Okay. Just cheer me on. Insert applause here again.
So I know we've been beating Kaladesh over the head this last couple of weeks, as most people do with every good spoiler season. But here we are on the eve of the pre-release. Has anyone's opinions changed? Are there any amazing modern cards that came out of that last stretch of spoilers? Or is it just business as usual here in the additional stretch?
It's just business as usual in my perspective, but I'm still hyped up on the set overall.
I think anything sort of after the, there was like a couple things after the inventions, but that was sort of the big bomb.
The masterpieces.
The inventions.
There's one thing you might not be aware of about the masterpieces. A lot of them were painted traditionally, actually a large number of them, and some of them are just going absolutely crazy.
Nice. Like the are you involved with any of those sales?
No, I cannot swim in the waters that deep anymore. Like for example, the Soul Ring, the auction ends on Thursday.
Yeah.
Now, guess how much it's currently going for with 4 days left to go, or 2 days left to go in the auction?
$80,000.
Wow, that's a little higher than I was going to go. I was going to say $16,600.
Wow. He had insider information. Don't listen to TSG. He didn't do that. That wasn't honest.
The original Magic artwork I own is a very modest.
Go make a kid cry.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The swords are all going for $5,000-$6,000, if not more. And I think the Mox Opal went for $11,000.
Nice.
That's amazing. So,
It's been crazy. The Mana Crypt being auctioned now, I think it's up to 9,000. The Aether Vial did not go to auction. Apparently somebody came to the artist with an offer, which we've been told is from sources in the know that it was a solid offer, but if it had gone auction, he probably could have gotten about $2,000 or more for it, more than what he got for it. But some of the pieces, you won't be able to get, like Noah Bradley's Cloudstone Curio is absolutely gorgeous and 100% digital, but I'm sure he will have some amazing prints of that available.
Yeah, I think I commented on that art on the last cast. I really thought that that one was one that I hadn't heard a lot of people mention the art on that one, and that one struck me as really, really nice.
It feels like with the masterpieces, so many of them being physical pieces these days, and again, you're the person to kind of, or one of the people to ask about this, with so much magic artwork going digital, with physical pieces being so rare, do you think an emphasis was from branding, was from kind of the, I'm not sure which, I mean, maybe the art team over there at Wizards, who, you know, you think they asked the artists, hey, could you do these as physical paintings? Do you think that that conversation took place?
But I think more they just went with their artists that are going to take their time with it. Like Chris Ron did several of the pieces. I mean, you saw his Mox Opal and his Crucible, but he also did, I mean, his work is is well known for being amazing, like the cube, the Holiday Cube Black Lotus a couple of years ago. It really took, I mean, for the magic art market, it took everybody by surprise, ended up going for like $16,500. And so people definitely enjoy his work. Vulcan Baga, they can't get Donato anymore, so they get Vulcan Baga, because he worked with Donato, apprenticed with him basically, so you get a lot of the same elements that you'd see with Donato, with Vulcan's work. So they went with their artists that they knew they could execute. The only artist that I'm actually kind of surprised that they weren't able to include is Therese Nielsen, because I would think that her style really could have, like the filigree that you see on everything, I think she really could have done amazing things with it. I guess the only
they have her on lock for some of the next set?
It's possible. I mean, she usually doesn't do that many pieces per set. Usually you only see her doing like 2-3 max. She's got a lot of other things going on. But she could have, the only thing, there was a lot of metallic, and her pieces are usually somewhat soft. So they might have kept it, out. I wouldn't be surprised if I did see a piece by her in the next set, and hopefully with the next block, we'll see a lot more with her, because I think she would do some really great stuff with Egyptian themed artwork.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I've really seen too many things from Therese that I didn't think was amazing.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. I think maybe she doesn't have anything on this set because maybe they commissioned her for a couple of the masterpieces for next set.
That would be awesome to see.
Is there any other artists that weren't on there that you thought would have been good for it?
I think Mark Zug could have done well. I mean, he did the original Batterskull, the original Swords, but he doesn't do intricate very often. Just looking at the list, I mean, they grabbed a bunch of the artists that that I think were great. I think that they had a really great selection, and it's obviously amazing art. It's definitely some of my favorites.
What is your favorite art out of the masterpieces so far?
Man, I'd say the Mana Crypt. And then as far as creatures go, I really love that new Hangerback Walker. It's just, it's fun. It has all the elements to it, and it's on a good card. So it pulls everything together.
Now, as a major art connoisseur and someone that has intimate knowledge of magic, what do you think, or rather, what would you like to see from kind of the masterpiece series moving forward? Because this is something that apparently is never going to go away, so we're only going to get additional iterations of it. What do you think would bring more to that collection?
Well, I mean, with the next set, we're just going to see more of the same, most likely. I mean, they're going to complete the sword set, but it'll be very interesting to see how they handle going into different creature, different card types like creatures or spells. I mean, obviously we had our expeditions where they kind of did a trial run of this idea, and they had their own custom frame for those. And then we see what we have here with the masterpieces for Kaladesh. And once we go into the next block, I wouldn't be surprised if it was if they were going to try out masterpiece creatures or something like that. I mean, they could even do a masterpiece where that's like masterpiece spells. So, I mean, obviously you have Nicol Bolas, so you could have Cruel Ultimatum and a whole bunch of other spells that you could include in there. I mean, we didn't see too many super expensive cards reprinted here. But there's always the possibility that they could do something like Mana Drain or anything like that. And at that point, you're going to have probably a frame that's the same idea, just stylized, captures the essence of the block itself. And then, I obviously they're doing spells. They'll probably make it colored. And I don't know if they would change it. They might keep it, the same basic, frame, but, different colors.
Now, I think the idea like they would probably even break it up even more, like to where it's masterpiece, like sorcery edition. Because if they keep planning on doing it, they need to differentiate as much as possible. Like maybe even to the point where, okay, it's colored spells of this type or you know things like that, rather than just go spells. So all the instants and sorceries. Maybe they do sorceries this one and instants this one.
Tribes would be cool.
Tribes would be good. Yeah.
You can get some more crabs.
You know, you stick with it. You can keep getting the crabs if you want.
Tribal crabs.
Go to Saskatchewan. That's probably the place.
Oh, snap.
TSG, you had something that you were also wanting to
do? No, I feel like, you know, again, since this masterpiece, and we touched on this a little bit last week, since the masterpieces are going to be here forever, I do feel like they're going to be more geared towards the plane, and they're going to be different. So that's why I'm saying, you know, like the border is up for debate and up for change. The card type, the foiling process, like everything is still kind of modal because we're not kind of sticking with the classic Magic art dimensions frame, you know, kind of the restrictions. So because of that, you know, it's kind of like what, you know, the proxy guys work is all the time. It's more open to interpretations. Like what would look good? So like we can far enough we can think ahead is, all right, we know what kind of like mechanical and gear shit looks cool. We think from that iteration, we have an idea of maybe what some kind of, you know, Pharaoh-esque Egyptian look will look like, but you know, take planes maybe we've already been to or take concepts we may have already seen and start to think like, oh, well, you know, what would I want to see in that from a,
Well, I described the other week on the cast of having, and I absorbed this from Maddie's brain while he was feeding on maple syrup. We were talking about having, imagine the unprinted full foil sheet is then fish-eyed, so like oil slicked, and then printed on, so all of your frames are actually different. But would assemble one piece as a full sheet together. And then the whole, all of the ones in New Phyrexia, Mirrodin, wherever you end up after that, could look all oily, oil slicked over. That's one possible way that's just like kind of basic.
It doesn't sound basic at all to me, but, you know, it sounds awesome.
Well, we're not graphic designers.
That's true. I am graphic.
And that's another question. That's another question to ask is, you know, as we move to other planes, but we're still drawing cards from older planes, could we see a sub-series that's not necessarily plane-related? Would that be something people would be interested in? Do people have any kind of expectations there in terms of, you know, like maybe we will do a Phyrexia subset, even though we're not going to a set that is necessarily Phyrexia-related?
I don't know whether they'll do that, but, I mean, who knows? Like that's like you said, it's all up in the air. And if there's anything that the Magic community is good at is wild speculation.
And more and importantly, bitching. Tristan, more importantly, you said it. They're doing this forever.
I know. I still don't like the ring of it when I hear it said out loud, but it is what it is.
I don't know. I don't see a massive downside to this.
I think it's upside too. I mean, if you want the cards, you can get them. You have to pay for them. If you open a card, you can sell it and pay for multiple drafts. I think that it doesn't take away anything other than making it a little bit harder to actually complete a set. So for collectors, I'm sure it hurts them in the wallet, but for players, it seems like a great way to build a deck, and add value on each individual pack without, you know, impacting, the players.
Yeah, I think overall it's just a sweet addition. Like, there's no downside in my viewpoint. Like, for the casual players, it just gives them one more, like, extra, like, oh shit, I opened this, you know, however silly some of these prices get, like $80 card that I'm never going to use, so I'm going to trade it to this person or sell it to my LGS and get all of these crazy cards that I couldn't afford that I will use, and somebody else gets to go and buy that card for their cube or their collection or whatever it is. And there's not going to be enough of them to just like flood the market and change anything. And it gives the artists more opportunities to do fun things and get more art out there. So I think it's just a win overall.
I guess it's like holo cards in trading card packs or signature cards in baseball cards. I mean, they're not going to affect your everyday run of the mill, you know, completest collection for the, I need the full set 1/121 or whatever, but I don't know. It's just something off about it. I'm not super into it. I guess I can't quite put my finger on it. I need more time on this.
Knows? Maybe there is something that I'm not seeing. That's why I said, like, from what I can tell, what I can see, there's no downside. Yeah, I'm excited to open my cards and hopefully, you know, find one. So,
out of all of the card games I know that have more than three rarities, or more than, let's say, four rarities, because I think Magic has like the least number of rare cards, this change, this addition of the fifth rarity, the spot here, is the most well-received and the most well-thought-out in all of the games, because even so simply, a new player opens this and immediately knows it's the nut, right? It doesn't matter who you are, you open a pack, you see a card like this, you're like, something is fucking awesome here. In Pokemon, I open Pokemon packs all the time, and there's like reverse foils and semi foils and holo foils, and then some of them are like actually sweet, and it almost makes it just not cool. Like,
makes it a chore, like, to figure out whether it's a good, like, a rare card or not.
And it makes me think that all of the foils must be kind of shitty, because why wouldn't I want the best one? In fact, what is the best one? So the fact that these stand out as just the absolute high nut when you open them to even a brand new player, or like I see dads that want packs for themselves that give them to their, you know, 4-year-old kids that know enough to know that something like this is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, like sometimes the having 5, 6, 7 rarities, which some games do, takes away from how awesome they are. And I think that Magic has just nailed it with this.
I think they're getting lucky in a way. Like, I definitely, as a player of Magic for 20 plus years, like, I would turn my nose up at games that tried to pull players in with 5, 6, 7 rarities. I mean, it reminds me of when baseball cards really went belly up back in the mid 90s, when there was like, okay, well, no one's buying this shit, so we're going to make it a lottery and we're going to include a piece of Frank Thomas's bat at 1 in every 30,000 packs or some shit. And it took away from the game aspect, which was always what made Magic for the longest time so exciting, was the game aspect, not the, and again, I was a kid, so I guess the collectability aspect was not as much of a draw for me to begin with. And I know as I've grown older, I've met plenty of Magic just collectors, but not having 7 rarities never deterred them from collecting. The excitement was a lot in the artwork. It was is about him being a completist. And maybe the internet age has destroyed this. You know, it's no longer like, oh, if I collect the whole set, I'll know all the cards in the set and I can see them all. And we don't have that problem we clearly used to have 20 years ago. So I'm not sure how to receive it. I mean, yes, Magic's doing it better than other games, but I'm not following other games as closely. Like, I don't know if Yu-Gi-Oh! Went from 6 rarities to 8 rarities in one set, or exactly how things go down for those kind of games. You know, Magic is smart enough to at least introduce it slowly and seemingly organically to their players. We started with a 4th rarity. That was 8 years ago at this point. We're coming up on clearly what is a 5th rarity, but now it's not encroaching on single print run cards that you will definitely need for tournament decks, but who knows what the future will hold. I'm very, very precarious about the whole thing. I don't know.
Believe, Tristan.
Oh, clearly. If I didn't believe, I would be like, double guns, you guys, I'm out of this podcast. No more Magic for me.
Peace. But exactly. You're here.
Exactly. Because I still love it, and I still want it to be good, and I'm trying to think of all the positives. I'm trying to remember the Battle for Zendikar pre-releases where, you know, the store I was at the time had all the MTG Goldfish prices printed for everyone, gave handouts so people could look at them to know what they're getting into so they don't get kind of ripped off, and then also seeing the excitement of kids opening cards. And there is a distinct difference. You know, I know I was standing over a table at a Cons Draft one time, and this young kid opened a pack, and in it there was a foil polluted Delta and a much more exciting rare creature. And the kid hemmed and hawed in his own head, and no one saw him but me standing over the table of like making the decision. And he clearly had no idea that this thing was super rare and as valuable as it could be. And he almost like, I don't know what went into his decision process that he eventually took the Delta, but he was very close to not doing so. And clearly with this whole masterpiece concept and the way the cards are going to be perceived and delivered to people, that's not going to be the kind of thing people are going to run into in the future. You're never going to have the feel bads that definitely come with the, oh my God, you just passed me a $50, $60 card. I can't believe you did that. Which has happened before in various varieties where someone's like, but I wanted this dragon, or I'm not in that color, I'm playing green kind of thing. So yeah. That's better for that scenario.
Well, I was just looking at these cards because I've actually been researching the 93-94 format. Because I have what little spare time I want, like, spend it playing Degenerate Magic. And I just picture what Wizards, like, has to, the bar, how high the bar is set, how great the expectations are of what opening a booster pack is supposed to do to you, like, emotionally. Because I've been looking at cards, like you said, from 93 and 94, and even the most badass cool cards aren't really even that good. And most of them don't look that good because the art styles aren't there and they're not foil and they're not like that. But these, even looking back now, the cards are amazing. Like, I don't know if I would have been excited to open up like a Bazaar of Baghdad. You know, but the emotional response that you're going to get out of players when you open up this literal gem. I mean, they're even going to be able to foil these in different colors of foiling, right? These cards are going to feel warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're definitely going to be different.
Yeah. I think they're awesome. I don't think there's a good chance that these are going to somehow end up a flop or end up as a negative.
The reason I'm so excited to keep talking about this is because do you guys realize that in like just a few short hours, I'm going to get to open some of these booster packs?
Go F yourself. What?
What? It's going to be awesome.
You need to send me messages or pictures.
Oh, man. Like, it'll be midnight pre-release. We're going to like, because obviously I'm sticking around for all the pre-releases. We'll have like mad pictures up, and I can't wait to see the energy from the room. I remember what it was like for Expeditions, and there was way more Expeditions open than we were expecting. I remember a lot of people being really happy. So yeah, if this is anything
nice
like that, it's going to be fucking awesome. If it's anything like that, we have room for 64 people for our midnight pre-release, and we usually play with about 80 with people standing at the counter and showing up late and whatever. So just like the midnight energy is just going to be amazing. I can't wait. I'm so excited. Tristan, yeah, I wasn't bitching earlier. I was, but I needed to get it out because this is going to be awesome.
Kool-Aid re-drank. I understand. Yeah. It's totally possible.
What would you want to open? If you could open one of these and you want to win your draft, what do you want to open? I mean, it's Sol Ring, but Sol Ring,
yeah. I was going to say, what is that a real question?
I've got a good story when it comes down to it. So you guys, maybe even Josh. I don't know, Josh, did you get a chance to draft the cube in Vegas?
Josh must have checked out.
Josh is done listening to us. I understand, Josh.
I'm here. I'm sorry. Hey, mute. I'm sorry, I was on mute. My dog was in here barking at me, so I had to take us down. Yeah, I did. I got to play the cube once, drafted some weird opposition Eureka combo deck. It worked once and then folded horribly to Maddie's mono white aggro.
So we've all drafted
those aggro
my
decks
cube.
Keeping people
we've all drafted my cube on the cast before. We all know it's my baby. We all know it's eventually going to be broken down to pay off disgusting school loans. But it is the masterpiece that I've put together over playing this game for so long. What feels like a couple of years ago at this point, something happened. Because now in my cube, and this has been this way for a while, there is a fake Mana Vault. So I need to open one of those to replace the fake Mana Vault that someone put in my cube a long time ago.
Somebody stole your real Mana Vault and replaced it?
Yeah, it's really weird. Like it had been in there a while, and the card had started to start to come apart a little bit. And it's an excellent fake. It's definitely a glue-on from another card. And one of the corners started to peel. But it is a fake Mana Vault made from a collector's edition card. Because we went through and looked at the jeweler's loop to see the print style.
Wow, that's
wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, like, not an everyday story. But yes, I am in need of a Mana Vault. And this is a good opportunity to get one and not pay, like, fucking $500 US to get a new beta one.
Well, Tristan, how about this? I like called shots, so if I open one, I'll mail it to you.
Well, motherfucker, you better play more than one event.
So let's see. I'll probably end up having like four doing like four.
The best thing is now you'll have made this declaration of generosity, and you're gonna open a Sol Ring. You're gonna open like the next closest thing and be like, oh,
yo,
so close.
A Sol Ring would be fucking sweet, because I've been looking into this 93-94 format, and how dope would that be to have this as your Sol Ring?
Well, see, I don't know what circle you run in, because in California, we have the elitist, snobbish 93-94 players that only allow you to play with the printings of those cards from those times.
Well, sure, I have a beta signed one, so I guess I could use that if you're going to make me, but this is cool.
I'm not making you. I'm not.
No,
the guy that sold his Juzam Dejin for $450 like 2 years ago, thinking I'd won the fucking lottery, and then the card just keeps going up because everyone plays four of it in their goddamn deck, and I'm like, all right, well, who knows? But if you look at a bunch of the cards, as you're in the game, Tony, there's a bunch of printings on cards that are like, you know, think like alpha through fifth edition. Like, there's a massive drop off of where it goes from like revised to fifth edition in terms of prices. And Mana Vault's a great example of that card. You look at the price of Mana Vault, you think like, oh, why wouldn't I buy a fifth edition one that's like $1.50 when the revised, like the unlimited one's like $50 now or something ridiculous, because that one's the one that's legal in 93-94.
Yep.
But it totally depends on your circle. It totally depends on, because some areas are so desperate to get 93-94 started that they'll definitely bend the rules to let cards in. And I totally understand that. Like, as fun as and as cool as it is to see a picture of a deck that's all cards from that era and really takes you back in time, you don't get to actually play if you don't have all the shit from that exact time frame. So, whatever works. And if someone played a Masterpiece Sol Ring in a 93-94 game, it would definitely be like, what the hell, man? You probably could afford one from the era anyway.
You already have one, right?
Exactly.
Be like, this is just a proxy for mine. And then you pull it out, like a graded like gem case, right? And then use that. Like, this is just my proxy. Like 60 top loaders beside you.
You elitists.
Yeah, I plan on playing probably two events over this weekend. I'm not sure. I'm too old for that whole midnight bullshit. I don't need that in my life anymore. And it's the final homestand this weekend for the Dodgers. We're trying to clinch the West, so I might be at the game one of the days. Not sure. I'm already locked into Saturday morning, though, for sure. What about you, Dave? Are you going to make it to a pre-release this time out? Are you going to have a chance, or is your work schedule super off right now?
No, it's not my work schedule. I am going to be at the Life is Beautiful concert festival in Las Vegas all 3 days, so, like, I planned that months ago, so I'll be, going to a Mumford & Sons concert, and Lumineers, and I will be having fun, but it won't be Magic-oriented, sadly. Kind of sadly. The concert itself is going to be awesome.
I mean, you're in Vegas. I mean, could you really complain of not of too many things to do or be distracted by something else and not have a chance?
What do you mean?
I mean, like, did not get a chance to play Magic. If you're already in town for a concert or something already.
No, it's a concert festival. It's all 3 days.
Oh, see, I'm too old for that shit, too. I don't go to that stuff.
I'm older than you, sir.
I know. We keep bringing this up.
I know, strong. But you're saying that you're too old for it, and that's just not true.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just not into it. I'm interested in going to John Williams is going to be at the Hollywood Bowl soon. I'd like to go to that. That sounds
Hollywood
like
Bowl
fun.
Hollywood Bowl is a great venue, other than parking and getting to it.
Yes, everything about Hollywood Bowl is great except for Hollywood Bowl. I agree with you completely. Well, if you can be helicoptered into that venue, you're in good shape.
Exactly. Like, the venue itself is amazing. I went and saw American Authors, The Script, and One Republic there. And it was an amazing concert, but the hour and a half sitting still on the highway outside of it and parking was a nightmare. Outside of that, though, great concert. But no, sadly, I won't be getting a pre-release in, but maybe I will get a release tournament in.
That might be... Well, I got to look at my... Oh, no, man, all right. I got to look at my calendar again, because I keep talking about trying to make it out there to see Kevy, the new baby, and his pile of old Magic cards.
Monroe is cute, and yeah, that pile of Magic cards is stupid. Screw Kevy and his ability to just luck into stupid shit.
We didn't even mention why he's not here today.
Yeah,
I guess
he's
we
sick
could.
As a dog.
There you go. Yeah, continue to turn the knife on the guy who's probably puking into a toilet of
he
his own.
He deserves it. Like... He's also experienced at it. He does it to himself all the time.
Right. Yeah, those things are by choice.
Yeah. So, now, obviously, nobody loves or respects Kevy more than I do, and it sucks that he's sick and he can't make it tonight, especially because I know he was looking forward to talking to Josh and talking about the original MTG token art. But when shit like this hits you, there's not really much you can do, and when you have kids, it's pretty likely.
Well, I can't think of anything else off the top of my head that's super pressing or important. Again, we got the pre-release this weekend. Clearly, at least Tony and I. Josh, are you going to hit a pre-release? Are you going to play it all?
I'm definitely going to try to. I gotta hit that lottery.
You got to go
what's
for those
your,
masterpieces.
What's your local game scene like up there? I didn't even know. What part of Oregon are you in?
I'm in Bend. So we're in the high desert. Not exactly as, amazingly hot as down there in California, but
I was gonna say, I bet you our high desert has you beat.
Yeah, it's something like I think it maxed out around 91, 92.
What?
So yeah,
that's where we're at now.
yeah, now we're in the. It's kind of cold here. It's getting into like the low 70s. Hot low 60s.
It was 101 degrees tomorrow, or me yesterday.
Yeah,
I don't even know what any of those numbers mean.
I couldn't tell you because I don't know the transition off of Celsius. Isn't it like plus 32 or minus 32 or something like that?
It is. Yeah, yeah. I actually know what it is.
There's a 32 to 5 over 9 or 9 over 5 in there somewhere.
Yeah, when I listen to you guys just talk about it, I have to actually do the math before it registers to me that any of what you're saying makes sense.
Yep, but then when you say stuff like 12 liters of quinoa salad, that's when I'm like,
right?
What the fuck?
Why would you
drink that stuff?
Yeah. 5 gallons.
Liter of cola!
A liter of
cola!
Oh man, I can't wait for that movie.
Yeah, number 2.
Yeah, it's
so,
going to be fucking
anyway, Josh, you were talking about your local game scene. I don't want to get too far off field.
Yeah, so Ben's not that big, coming from Richmond, where we had about a million people in the metro area. Ben's got about 100,000 people or so.
Wait, now, before you continue, is it Ben or Bend?
Bend, like you bend a pipe.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
It's a beautiful place, but Magic is not the pastime for the area. We have two stores, one that's for more, you know, hardcore gamers, and then one that's for kind of a mix of casual gamers and board gamers that also play Magic, that sort of thing. And I've my hardcore days are pretty much past me, so I go to the nicer one that's got you know, has beer on offer. You can drink while you draft.
Fuck you guys and your awesome game stores.
It is Oregon. I mean, if there's not beer involved, people don't come.
jokes. There's jokes.
Yeah. And then, I'm definitely going to do the draft, and they do a Swiss round, and they randomly hand out the F&Ms and F&M promos, and it's pretty chill. It's not too many people. Usually they max out at like 20 on a really good day, but generally their F&Ms are something like between 6 and 8 to 10 people, so it's kind of a small small play group.
Yeah, I mean, but sometimes it's better.
Yep.
Sometimes having that intimate, casual play group is, you know, it makes it a lot more comfortable, a lot more fun, loose. So, hopefully you pull a masterpiece or two.
we're hoping for three. That's, you know, if it's under three,
greedy.
We're not doing real.
You are greedy.
Spicy.
I'm hoping for one. I'd be ecstatic at two. Jesus.
Did you, Gumby, you must have pre-released with BFZ. I assume you did. That's the one where you guys drunkenly played in the dungeon, right?
Yeah, we got pre-release packs, and we did our own little one in the dungeon as we were both unable to actually go to the pre-release. And then shortly after that, my life, you know, to quote a popular show, got flipped and turned upside down. So I'm just now starting to, like, get back into the point where, you know, maybe I'll be looking at going to some tournaments, and I'm still trying to stay up on the cards. I'm still, you know, pre-ordering a few boxes at least, if not a case. So I'm hoping to get back into the swing of things and start brewing a little bit and dipping my toes back in the water. So we'll see. But as of right now, still very dry.
Well, long story short, like, you weren't in a room where people were, like, cracking packs, like, day of to see, like, what percentage of people were hitting expeditions. Like,
no.
I was in Oakland for that one, and I can remember, I mean, I hit an Overgrown Tomb in the second event I did, and then I remember I had a Verdant Catacombs the next set, or next pre-release, but those were the only two I ever opened the entire time I played, and I never missed a draft week, had some bonus drafts, did all that kind of extra stuff. But there is something fun. And the nice thing is the frequency with those ones, which was now, I think when they crunched the numbers, it would be easier to find a expedition than it will be to find a masterpiece, was that I think we had a room of something like the high 40s, the low 50s in terms of players. We hit a couple, like,
honestly,
in terms of number of packs that were out there. Yeah, it was definitely fun to know, like, oh, someone's going to hit something. We're all going to get to see it.
We're all going to
get to
see it.
Especially at that point in time, it was so new. That just seeing the cards was exciting to try to find out, like, what's in there, what's going on. And this time we still have a little bit of that mentality, because the look is going to be different overall. Like, people are going to want to see them. It's not going to be like 2 years from now when the shit's old hack and it's like, oh, whatever. Let's move
you got
on.
One. Whatever. I also think, and, you know, it's just pure speculation on my part. I think that they plant a few more of these cards in the pre-release.
That's the Maddie coming out right there. I'm glad we got that. That's
I that's why I said it's pure speculation. There's no math or investigation behind it. It's just I've been and seen enough of it because I wasn't in the room, but we have our own Facebook page for, like, Ridgecrest Magic players and things. So I got to see and hear of who opened what and how many were opened. And, you know, we max out. I don't know what Just Imagine, like, cuts the limit off at. There's, like, 36 or something people. They can't have any more than that in the store. And there were a number of expeditions opened up. And then after the pre-release, those numbers dwindled like by a large margin. So it, for one, it would just be smart for them to do that. Like, it gets people more excited. They feel a lot better. Like, once you open one, you're like, oh, I want to do this again. You know, you're going to maybe buy some more packs or whatever. But, like I said, still just speculation, but I feel like they're open with more frequency on the pre-release.
I don't know if we'll ever have enough information to confirm or deny. And I don't think anyone from Wizards will ever give you that straight kind of answer. So
probably not. It's just my opinion.
I mean, from a player perspective, I would love that to be true. I would hope that the boxes that they use for F&M have more of them as well, because the players that are a little more casual have a higher chance of getting them. That's how I feel. But yeah, you never know. I mean, Tony, you're still on the inside of this. You're still working with this all the time. Do you feel that any one particular Magic printing or offering is going to have a higher chance than another?
I have been programmed not to answer this question.
Ooh, he's so deep inside, kids. He knows the answer to all of our questions.
No, I also feel like the pre-release kits are loaded, but again, pure speculation.
Yeah. So I've been around enough pre-releases since they've started doing these boxes that, like, the special cards and, like, you know, the promo Planeswalkers, since when they started getting away from just the standard promo, I don't even remember exactly which set that was, it was a smart move to throw up the different types of promos. It feels like the high-end ones are drawn with much higher consistency than the shitty ones, you know. So, and I think that's a good thing. I'm not complaining. I hope that that's what they do, because it, no greater time are you going to see people that are just casual than at pre-releases. It's not like the tournaments where you're going for a pro tour qualifier, or you know, the spikes are going to show up in force. Like, even more so than an F&M, the pre-releases are, you're going to see just the people that love Magic and just want to open the set a week early and play some fun Magic. That's when you see everybody come out. So for them to increase the likelihood of masterpieces or expeditions, that's a good thing.
100% agree.
Awkward silence. You know, and so with that, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
She's so cold and human. Nice.
Applause.
Applause again.
Yeah. I don't need the pushing from TSG. I can sense the writing on the wall there.
You got there. You got there.
I think we almost got to 2 hours. You know, it's gonna probably be like an hour and a half after editing, but I think it's pretty solid.
No complaints.
Well, that's what the Heavy Meta After Hours is for. As we had extra recording that didn't get recorded.
I had an introduction all set up and ready to go because Tony wasn't going to be here, but then when he made it, I was like, well, shit, I have to scrap that.
Save it for next time.
What, next time that Tony and Kevy are both not here?
You never know, man.
Well,
by that time,
like, Tony's going to have dealt with all his legal stuff. Like, I was going to say, you know, we've removed all the felonies and most of the fucks from the cast. And
This will make the end. But what's your schedule like, Dave? How long do we even still have you?
I mean, there's a good likelihood that for the next few months, I will probably be on days. And then there's a good chance even after my security clearance comes back, I'm not going back out to where I was working before. I'll have a better job. And yeah, so I'm trying to make the most out of this weird situation I'm in, and talking to my boss and working on a new program and trying to get into a new tasking. And so, yeah, like, if that happens, I will be back on my normal day schedule like I'm on right now, and I'll be getting paid more, and, yeah, it'll be good. So I'll keep you updated as I know more, but at this point, it's not looking like anytime soon I'll be going back out to where I worked.
Okay. I mean, you know, number one, as long as you get to stay employed, because that, obviously, that situation you started with a few weeks ago sounded awful.
Yeah, I was not sure. They found some stupid workaround where they have me just working in the office, but even since then, like, they've actually found me useful things to do, and so that's what I'm doing. Like, today I went up and represented the company at a career fair up at the college and talked to high school students and college students about prospective jobs and opportunities and whatnot, and now they have me essentially experimenting and learning this asset management program, and probably are going to want me to implement that within the contract, and so I'm just trying to make the most of it, and we'll see, because I'm finishing my associate's degree this semester as well, so there's a good chance that I'm just not working and actually just a college student after that.
But you're going to be, because you finish the associates, are you going to still stay down there for school, do you think? Are you going to move, or do you have any idea at this stage?
I don't have a solid idea. I have a lot of opportunities on the table. Like, even with the company I'm with, I have the opportunity for them to pay for my bachelor's degree, but I have to get a degree in something that they are interested in, and then I would have to come back and work for them for a set period of time. So I'm not sure if I want to go that route. And then I also, you know, can continue to work for them and do it online and get tuition assistance, but I can get, you know, a degree in whatever the hell I want. And then there's just the opportunity for me to just go, you know what, I want to go and take out student loans, experience college life, and I will be applying to SDSU, and if I get in, there's a good chance that that's the route I go.
There's a good place to be. That's where my mom graduated from, actually.
SDSU? Yeah, that's where my ex-brother-in-law graduated from. It's an awesome school, so. And just an awesome area. San Diego's amazing, so.
It can still
go fuck itself, but it still can.
We hate it because it has the best weather, and we do not have that weather, even though we clearly always want that weather.
Exactly. That's why they can go fuck themselves. They're just, you know, elitist pricks, and.
Yeah, fuck them.
All right, guys. Well, I have company, so I'm going to bail out. John, really, thanks for coming on.
Any of those good stories. I'm not usually a fisticuffs kind of person.
You know, I can see that.
Yeah.
You seem more like a talk your way out of a fight kind of guy.
It's true. I'm a slow, subtle cutter. I mean, you know, I'm not from a small town, so I have different
Keep that up. You're going to get into some fisticuffs.
I love you, Dave.
Love you too, buddy.